3:02 on March 2nd, 2023. Today, March 7th? March 7th, 2023. Members present, Representative Johnson, Representative Allard, Representative Armstrong, Representative Story, my Vice Chair Wright, and myself, Representative Shaw. We've got a quorum to do business. If you would, please silence your cell phones. If anyone in the audience today needs to pass a note to committee members, please get the attention of our committee aide, Josh Walton. He'll take care of it. I'd like to also make note, Representative Carpenter just showed up. I'd like to thank our committee secretary, Sophia Tenney, Kelsey Riker for teleconferencing. Our first order of business today is House Bill 2. It's an act relating to contracts with public agencies and relating to the State of Israel, sponsored by Representative Vance. This bill is being brought up under bills previously heard and scheduled. We only have a brief matter of housekeeping related to this bill today. We have, in coordination with the bill sponsor, we've had a substitute drafted to correct an oversight in the original bill. The new House State Affairs Committee substitute was distributed to members earlier and is available on members' desks and on basis. I'd like to invite my staff, Josh Walton, Representative Vance's staff, Jake Alameda, to the table. Mr. Walton, would you briefly summarize what was done in the committee substitute, after which Mr. Alameda can add any additional comments regarding the motivation behind the changes and answer any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joshua Walton, and I'm staff to Chair Laddie Shaw. So briefly, the change to House Bill 2 is a very simple one. The CS merely adds a provision to Section 2 on page 2 at line 20, which specifies that the section, and therefore the bill as a whole, does not apply to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. And that concludes all of the changes in the committee substitute, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Alameda, put yourself on the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Jake Alameda, Chief of Staff to Representative Vance. And as Mr. Walton just said, it's a very simple change. Our original intent with the first draft of the bill was to exclude the Permanent Fund Corporation so that any and all investments that the Permanent Fund Corporation does at all times would not be interfered, regardless of what those companies or investments, their opinions are. Our intent is to leave that be. They're independent, quasi-governmental in nature, as has been the intent when they were created. So we intend to stay consistent with that and leave them alone.
Thank you, Mr. Alameda. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, Mr. Vice Chair, could you move the adoption of the CS forward?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the House State Affairs Committee adopt Committee Substitute House Bill 2, and it's Work Order 33LS0084B as our working document.
Are there any comments, questions, or others from the committee? So adopted. Seeing no objections, the committee substitute has been adopted by our working document. Thank you. With that, before we hold the bill over, are there any additional questions from members of the bill, sponsors, staff, or our invited testifiers? Seeing none, we have not had public testimony on House Bill 2, so it is our intention to hold this bill to a later date, at which time we will have public testimony. With that, we will hold House Bill 2 over and move to our next item of business. Our second order of business is House Bill 22, an act relating to participation of certain peace officers and firefighters in the defined benefit and defined contribution plans, public employees retirement system of Alaska, relating to eligibility of peace officers and firefighters for medical, disability, and death benefits, relating to the liability of public employees retirement system of Alaska, and providing for an effective date. The bill is sponsored by Representative Josephson. Due to time constraints today, we will hear only an initial presentation from the bill's sponsor. I'll take a brief at ease to ensure that the presentation is ready to go. And back on the record, we are about ready to proceed with the sponsor's presentation. I'd like to note that the sponsor's presentation was really recently updated with additional slides. The complete and updated presentation was distributed electronically to members and is available on BASIS. The added slides should be in your packets on your desk for additional information if needed. At this time, I'd like to invite the sponsor of Bill 22, Representative Andy Josephson, and his staff to the table, and they're there to introduce their bill. Welcome to the State House Affairs Committee, and please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for giving us some time this March afternoon. I'm Andy Josephson. I represent District 13. It's very roughly South Midtown Anchorage. I come to you today to present House Bill 22. Again, appreciate the opportunity. This bill is 99% or greater a bill that passed the House last year. It made it to the Senate, obviously. In the Senate, the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee was so, I think, motivated by the bill that it sought to roll its chair effectively and to insist that the bill be advanced over the objection of its own chair, which is interesting. And the bill got it to Senate Finance. At that time, Chair Stedman said he wanted more information. He's now received a lot of that information a couple of weeks ago. And we have studied that information and I've talked to the administration about it. I wanted to give you some indication of how we got here. Here's how we got here. Between roughly 1961 or 62 and 2006, people who worked for cities and states and school districts got defined benefits. Those are guaranteed pensions. They're predictable. They are foreseeable. They have the effect of making employees feel desired and wanting to stay in their position. This is a known fact. Alaska is now the only state without them. In 2005, roundabout, a company called Mercer gave us bad advice. In fact, they committed gross negligence because the emails reflect that they said we didn't, between each other within the agency, we didn't, you know, do a good job by the state of Alaska. The state took that advice and harmed its own system as well by not paying toward the account. So in 2006, we ended defined benefits across the board. At the time, the pension service liability or pension service indebtedness was in the range of $11 billion. I've seen a number that suggests it's now just under $7 billion. I've seen also that the medical part of the indebtedness is overfunded. In fact, it's funded to about 130%. And it explains why the governor said, and I don't know if he said it to us, he certainly did, I think, but directed the arm board. He doesn't have that power. But the arm board said, this thing has more money in it than it needs to pay medical bills. Don't give us any money, which is interesting. The blended indebtedness now is 87%. That's regarded as a very steady, sturdy rate. But again, we ended the program in 2006. We went to what's called a defined contribution. That means every man and woman is on their own island. The state will contribute to the food and, you know, care, the feeding and care of you on your island, but it's your island. And if the stocks don't perform well, then you're on your own. That system has existed since. The thing I wanted to note about that is my bill from last year was sort of historic in that it got through with a bipartisan vote of 25-15 in the House. The Senate had previously passed a far more comprehensive bill during its bipartisan era in the late aughts or early teens. But the House had never done anything like this. So then comes along Republicans, Representative Holmes, a former minority and majority leader, Representative Millett, former rules chair Chuck Kopp, and they all had a model that is like this bill. And my bill is, in every respect, the bill that Representative Kopp had in the 31st legislature. What the bill does is, first of all, it says we're going to provide a new defined benefit for first responders. And that means that out of every 100 employees, and excuse my voice, but I, as you know, I was in the hospital 2 days ago. What that bill does is, what this bill does is it says out of every 100 employees, school district, municipal, state, we're going to afford these individuals 7.5% of them. We'll call it eight. Eight out of 100 will get a defined benefit. The other 92 won't. And why are we making that separation? First of all, one question has arisen: is that different treatment legal? The answer is absolutely, absolutely. In the previous defined benefits, first responders were treated differently in a different system, in effect, with different benefits than other PERS and TERS employees. Number one. Number two, we have a legal memo that reflects that's true. We would need to simply make a rational basis. That is, we would need to make a record, like we're starting to today, about why we're treating first responders differently. What the bill does, Mr. Chairman and committee, is the first thing I want you to be aware of is, contrary to a criticism recently from the Pension Integrity Fund, the bill does not open up or impact the old tiers. You need to think of this bill, as I said before, as being on Venus. The previous problem was on Mars. In fact, I would think of it this way. Our experts say that we will amortize the indebtedness in 16 years. Done. It's like a house payment. We're done. This cohort of people will impose or impact that 16 years in no way, one way or the other. In other words, pass the bill, it's going to be 16 years. Don't pass the bill, it's going to be 16 years. They don't interact. There is a small interaction, I know I just said they don't interact, in that we're moving some funds, a modest amount of funds, that would have gone to the way we pay down the indebted liability is we add up all the employees in the state. It's more complicated than that, but we add them all up. And we create a rate based on each one, and the city has its responsibilities, districts have theirs, the state has theirs. But the denominator, I think, essentially is number of employees. this new cohort, so think of a 22-year-old young man who wants to be a firefighter this summer. He wants to join Josephson's bill, we'll call it Tier 5, all right? He, even though he didn't create the pension liability, it ended when he was five or whenever, you know, you take my point. He will still be, the state will still look at him in effect and not draw out of his pay for that unfunded liability, but do as part of this headcount, it's essentially assigning money from that individual. It's almost a fiction to help pay down the liability. I call it a fiction, but it's really happening. It just isn't felt by that person. What this bill does is it shifts 2% that would have gone for this new individual to pay down the unfunded liability, and instead will go to his or her own new trust as part of this birthed new tier that I'm calling Tier 5. That is the only imposition. And there was testimony, I think it was either in Kopp's bill, Representative Kopp, in the 31st legislature, or my bill, that the imposition would be 6 months. So imagine instead of January 2039, it's now July 2039 that we pay off the indebtedness. That's the kind of impact, tiny impact, this bill could have. The cost associated with that shift is $6 million a year. And I want to be clear with the committee, because I was clear with the previous committee, but a member forgot, with great respect. I said that it's going to cost some money, and that's what it's going to cost. And you may say, well, geez, we have a fiscal problem. We're running a $400 million deficit. Neil Steininger just told me that upstairs. Why would I want to increase this to a $406 million deficit? The answer is fundamentally this fact, and it is the fact that the cost of training police and fire and corrections is so dear. It's so dear. You know, the way I think of this is, over at the Department of Revenue, there are accountants who make sure that the oil industry is paying their taxes. They're very skilled people. We didn't train them. They paid for their own training. But a state trooper, we paid for that, and we paid about $200,000 for it. And, of course, it's ongoing. But to get them into the field, roughly $200,000. A firefighter who comes to your house use the defibrillator, that's going to be in the $200,000 range. The most expensive trainees, mind you, interestingly, are often airport police and fire because they're trained in both skill sets. The cost of training, if there is 3% churn in their ranks, and the testimony from Mr. Dominic Lozano of the Fairbanks Fire Department was that the churn was in the range of at least 6%. The churn of 3% is 102 times the number of first responders is roughly 3,400 people. Remember I said this is 7.5% of humanity. That is the public sector humanity. So the cost for that 3% would be, or the number of people departing would be 102 employees. The cost would be, even at merely, if the cost were merely $102,000 a year, and sometimes it can be double that, the cost is just over $12 million a year. So cities and the state can benefit from this bill. Remember, I said the cost to the state for the plan, the enhanced retirement, is $6 million. This program would cost, would save $12 million in training costs because people would simply stick around. I know I'm giving you a lot of information, but my time is limited, and I want to make sure that I touch some of these points. The other thing I want you to know before I leave you today for sure is that there was a critically important hearing 2 weeks ago in Senate Finance, a critically important hearing. And in that hearing, requested by a friend, a guy I regard as a friend, Senator Stedman, an important person in this building, I told you that in May of last year, he heard my previous bill, and he wanted to see actual results of the DC, that is the current plan, and what the previous DB years and years ago would have provided, because he wanted to see whether the DC was just as good as the DB. And what we learned was that it wasn't. But here's the important part. We learned that for first responders, it especially wasn't. More than any other group, now teachers have their own set of issues because they don't get something called the supplemental benefit system, which is sort of self-explanatory, but it's largely designed to replace Social Security. But what we learned, and I met with the Division of Retirement and Benefits yesterday, and they confirmed my reading of it. So they're not going to draw at this stage of the game any conclusions about the report they wrote. I know that sounds odd, but I want to be clear that I'm not speaking for them. But I said, this is how I'm reading this data. And they said, yeah, that's how you're reading it. And that's, they didn't deny that it was a logical reading. I'll put it that way. All right. And what they reported was that first responders vis-a-vis, that is relative to where they were in 2006, are harmed more by this new 401k or DC system than the rest of us. And you might say, well, why is that so? Well, partly it's a number of factors, but one of them is that more was contributed to them in the previous system, and they were, I think, also contributing more. And then they also have overtime pay, which is a factor. But here's the key. The delta, the difference between DB and DC for everyone in the rosiest numbers, and I'll explain why I say that, for your typical office worker employee was 3% after 30 years of service. So to get to that close margin, you had to hang in there for 30 years. If you wanted to just work 15 years, you did far worse under defined contribution than defined benefit. But for first responders, it approached 8%. So they were significantly harmed by a defined contribution. What I took from that hearing was that more than ever, I feel very strongly about my bill. That in fact, first responders truly are a different breed. And part of it is they typically must, because of the burdens of the job, retire at younger ages. And so they cannot work as many years. You cannot expect them to work a 30-year plan. So what my bill does to stay solvent and conservative, albeit with this additional revenue that would be required because of the shifting of the unfunded liability, some call pension, residual pension losses, is it has a number of triggers. And these are remarkable, Mr. Chairman. They're remarkable because normally in a defined benefit system, the employee gets what they get. It's static, and they're not going to give up more. Once they get that thing contracted by law, it's going to be there for them, and there aren't triggers. There just aren't triggers. But listen to these triggers. Instead of a high 3, this system requires a high 5. Now, that's not exactly a trigger. But the stakeholders who designed this bill said, you know what? People are saying that public employees are too aggressively getting their high 3s, and the high 3 is not reflective of the body of work, which sort of by definition it isn't. So we're willing to go to a high 5. That was a give, right? The next thing they said is, we employees, as we're actively working, if the ARM board, the Alaska Retirement Management Board, says that your plan, your trust is underperforming, that is, it drops beneath 90%, which, mind you, in retirement world means it's performing really, really well, okay? But what they said was, and what this bill does is it says the ARM board can start to tick up the rate at which the employee's own salary will have a deduction for retirement. Now, this is an amazing thing. I'd never heard of this exactly. But the effect of this would be firefighter Susan goes home to stay-at-home dad, Michael, and Michael says, yeah, your paycheck came in. It's lower than it was 2 years ago. How's that possible? You got a merit promotion. Well, she says, the ARM board says that the trust is in a little of a slump, and so I'm paying more to the retirement than I otherwise was, to keep the thing solvent and afloat until such time as the ARM board reverses that order. That is a remarkable thing. The next thing it does is it goes even further than that. It says, what about the retirees? Now think about this. These could be 80-year-old men and women. Well, they're expecting their inflation adjustment called a PRPA. Well, now, as I understand it, and I've got to double check this, but effectively, this must apply to the new class, come to think of it. But so this wouldn't happen tomorrow. I want to be clear about that. But at some point, if this bill were to survive for decades, the retiree class would have their inflation frozen. Because again, the ARM board would say, the plans drop beneath 90%, and your pension adjustment through inflation is going to be frozen. You're just not getting it. And if they say, yeah, but inflation's eating away at my pension, hey, you're going to be a door greeter at Walmart for a month or two. That's your world. That is another give. Another give in this bill is there is no cost of living allowance. So there was this incentive built into Alaska law that said, if you stick around in Alaska as a pensioner, because we want you here, you're your grandchildren, et cetera, we're going to pay you 10% more. That doesn't exist. Now, you might say, well, aren't people going to move to Scottsdale? Well, they may. But still, it's a cost savings for the state. Mr. Chairman, as you can tell, I can be very passionate about this bill. I want you to know a couple other key things before I leave you. and I'm not sure where I am on the clock, although I see a clock there. But I came across something that was astounding to me today. And that is from a group called the Reason Foundation. The Reason Foundation. They are a critic, albeit I think there are harsher critics, and the Pension Integrity Project is one of them. But the Reason Foundation is a critic of defined benefit. However, remarkably, the Reason Foundation, and it's in the slide deck, concluded, and I want you to really think about this. The Reason Foundation effectively, it's as if they were sitting here saying, we agree with Representative Josephson that this part of one's pension, composite pension, needs to be 30%. And for first responders, now this was remarkable. For first responders, that's what my bill's about, they're only delivering 26%. You need to get 4% more. And they were aware that the number 26 may be worse than that because some of these are local cops and firefighters, and they may not even get an SBS. Often they do not get this extra supplemental benefit system. Here's the kicker. If you want to know how much our first responders really harmed, a conservative think tank called the Reason Foundation says they're harmed by 4%. Well, what does that cost? Ladies and gentlemen, the state's contribution and the city's contribution to police and fire is only 5% under the current tier. So in effect, this conservative group that has attacked defined benefits has said, Josephson's onto something. I mean, they don't name me, but, you know, this is a problem. And in effect, their solution would be to double the defined contribution that we're paying to first responders. And, you know, it is an amazing thing to read because I just want to wrap my arms around them and say, thank you for being my critic. Sir, I could go on and on about this. I'm not in top form, as you know. I do have a slide deck, and I could rip through that, and I can answer any questions you have.
Representative Josephson, thank you for that in-depth and informative presentation. Is it a necessity? How much of the slide deck? Do you want to go through the entire slide deck?
You know what I can do is I can speak to each slide for 5 or 10 seconds till we get to the bottom. And then I'd like to slow for one slide in particular.
Okay. And then following the slide deck, then we'll probably look for invited questions. Then, if
we can. Wonderful. I'd love that, sir.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead.
So this slide simply shows many of the things that I've highlighted. I talked about how the employee rate can be increased. I talked about how there may not be any pension adjustment for retirees. The high five, we've covered it. Next slide, please. This is the history that I've described for you. You see that this was a Republican-sponsored bill for a four-term period. Next slide, please. This bill does nothing more on medical. So, you know, historically, I said that medical is overfunded, but historically, medical was where the fear was because it's so erratic. You know, is your knee surgery $5,000 this year and $10,000 next year? This bill is bulletproof for the state of Alaska because all they're getting is a frankly totally inadequate medical plan, just like they are getting now, and just like all of us who are not in defined benefit are getting. In other words, you're on your own, you're a free agent, and we wish you good luck next year or next. All right, this is a good slide, I think, to review. We've covered a lot of it, but it gives you a nice eyeball look at the differences between the past and the present. And what I hope is the future. Next slide. Ladies and gentlemen, if public testimony happens at some later date, I pray that it does, you will hear, and I thank the firefighters who are here in particular, you will hear repeated testimony from our leading public safety workers that this is the cure. This is the fix to this problem. Next slide. We've talked about these things. One thing I wanted to mention. There is a slide coming up. These are sort of self-explanatory. But a couple of things that I didn't know prior to this year. We have a long-term treasurer named Miss Leary, and I don't recall her first name. Very skilled person. She's a top official with the Department of Revenue. And she notes that over the span of the life of our defined benefit, over the last 38 years of our defined benefit system, the state's return is 9%. So when you hear critics say, well, Josephson's plan will take a 7% rate of return. No, first of all, I think that the stakeholders say that the plan, and we can get into those details, could survive with something less than that. But the fact is, the ARM board has achieved such returns. Now, oddly, in the last 30 years rather than 38, there's been some delta. But the ARM board has done very well. Thank you. This just shows how we're only dealing, or some would say sadly, with 7.5% of the public employee sector. Please, next slide. These are the gives. Put that in quote, please, the record keeper. Gives. These are the things that the plan says. They're too sweet. These sweeteners are not affordable. We're not asking for them. Next slide, please. This just lays out, again, it's somewhat repeat. But there you see on the left, it's built on a lower expected rate of return of 7%. But I think that that's achievable. Note that the state's actuary, when they run their numbers, they hope to achieve 7.25%. So even if the plan is built on 7%, that should be fine. Next slide. Okay. This is the thing that was so interesting to me. I know this is not greatly readable, but here's the Alaska Reason Foundation. Note that one of the critics of the bill is named there, the Alaska Policy Forum. God bless them, but they did not like House Bill 55, did not like it. And here they are joining in a writing. Now look on the second column, quote, there is also potential major shortcoming in the Alaska DCR, defined contributions, for public safety employee participants. Public safety employees generally retire at an earlier age than general classification employees because of the requirements of the job. As Chuck Kopp says, do you want a 50-year-old firefighter running into a building or a 25-year-old firefighter running to get you in a building? You know, admittedly, there's some very fit 50-year-olds. I'm not one of them. Funding an earlier retirement date requires a higher contribution rate. It is generally accepted that without Social Security and early retirement ages, the total contribution rate for police and fire employees should be at a minimum of 30%. With public safety workers participating in PERS and not participating in Social Security, the combined 25.26% contribution rate is well below. Look at these adverbs. They don't say shortcoming. That's an adjective. They put in the adverb major shortcoming. They don't say below. They put in the adverb well below. I didn't ask them to write this. These are critics of my bill who are saying public employees are hurting under the status quo. And then they note that, a lot of these local state police, they don't even get the SBS. And we wonder, well, why are these folks leaving in droves? What's that about? Next slide, please. This is such a fascinating thing. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to pretend, and I will close up soon. Imagine you're just looking at the column on the left, or rather the columns on the left in blue. Just don't even look at the right yet. The columns on the left suggest that the DB plan, hypothetical salaries, I didn't write this, the state wrote this for Senator Stedman. But look at, for example, these are peace officers and firefighters. Look at a 15-year employee who, under the DB, so this is someone, say, in the 2005-1995 era, they would have replaced with DB 31.64%. Well, what do they do with a massively generous rate of return of 7%? Okay. They get 21%. So even in the first set of columns, they're hurting. If this slide deck only showed that first set of columns, we have a problem on our hands. But now let's look over at the other side. and we say, well, how did it really go in the real world? In the real world, not the predicted world, projected world, but the real world. And you look, I want you to look at the middle yellow column. That's where most of the employees are found. There were 672. And you see there that they only got 16.8% at 15 years. So you want to talk, you thought 10% was bad. How about 15% less revenue replacement? It's awful. Okay. Next slide. And then the other thing that I thought, I think this is our last slide, is this just struck me. This was from House Finance. I told you the treasurer for the state of Alaska. Last year, everyone in the world performed badly, blamed the Ukraine war. I'm sure it's part of it. PERS and TERS were down 4.1%. Sounds awful. And people say, Representative Josephson, this is what we fear. This is what we fear. Yeah, but we know that isn't always happening. That's why we draw from the ERA in a sustainable way. We don't say, well, we're never going to do that again. No more of this dividend stuff. We don't do that. And she notes, in an average, notwithstanding the horrible FY22, in a 38-year history that was reviewed, the average returns are 9%. I just think that we're in a better position than we were in 2005. And I think this is the class of people who must respond when we call. They must respond, that we need to help. And this report from DRB, Division of Retirement Benefits, only strengthens my case, and I'm grateful for it. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. I'm hoping we don't send you back to the hospital after that. Job well done. Well, with that, I know we've got some questions from our committee, and I've got Representative Allard on the queue.
Thank you, Representative Shaw. And through the chair, Representative Josephson, I have a couple of questions. Nurses, electricians, plumbers, business owners, restaurant service industry, do you feel that they are all also entitled or should receive defined benefits?
Through the chair, so I just spent 50 hours in a local hospital, and so nurses, I wouldn't ask me about nurses right now because I'm a little, I'm pretty sympathetic there. The difference with a lot, I mean, I've experienced a plumbing disaster. My wife, who's in the room with me, knows what I'm talking about. In September here in Juneau, the chair knows what I'm talking about. But those are not life-threatening, right? So we're talking about people dying. And so I think a distinction there is rational.
Follow up.
What about our U.S. military, our armed services? Do you think they're entitled to defined benefits?
Through the chair, 110%.
Do you know that they – may I do a follow-up?
Please.
I want to give you a little bit of education on the military. As a veteran, my husband's retired military. Today, the U.S. military under Obama, President Obama, they do not get defined benefits. In fact, they have a thing called TSP, which is the Thrift Savings Plan and continuation pay. They get a 5% match. I would put them on the same level as our first responders. So if the federal government has come down under President Obama since 2018 and says we can't afford it, they don't deserve it, they shouldn't have it, then it's a very hard sell for me to take the military out of it.
Through the chair, I appreciate what you're saying. Here's how you and I may differ philosophically. If I can feed a Junoite who's hungry, but can't get to the boy in Africa who's hungry, I'm going to just feed the Junoite.
Can I do a quick follow? I have a quick question. Thank you. Through the chair. Would you be open to U.S. military members who are residents of the state of Alaska, when they retire, that they get defined benefits paid by the state until the day they die and the day they retire?
Through the chair, no, probably not. And here's why, very quickly. I'm a state legislator. Certainly, if they're a state employee, well, my bill wouldn't cover them unless they're police and fire under the state scheme. There's a Senate bill that might, probably does. I think it's Senate Bill 80. So I can't, I can encourage our delegation to work on that problem, but I can't I can't do anything other than be sympathetic and supportive and make speeches.
Thank you. I find all Alaskans are important, regardless of the line of work they're in. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Allard.
That is
Allard. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Armstrong. My apologies.
Thank you, through the chair, and thank you. I know public safety is a huge issue for so many folks. Something you said struck me, and I took out my phone to do some math, and I looked at some recent spending that this body has done, and I think last year we spent $420 million on a single energy relief payment. Is that right? Someone who's here? I think it was $420 million. I think it hit accounts shortly before the election with the PFD. You said it was $6 million a year in the contributions, and so that one vote last year, $420 million, another vote this year for the same amount would actually cover 70 years of contributions for police and fire, not including what you mentioned. I think it was $12 million in savings from trainings every year and all of that. Am I understanding that correctly? Are there other – I've just been hearing so much about how we're going to go bankrupt, but I just want to understand, like, if it's just $6 million a year that we're looking at here.
Through the chair of Representative Armstrong, there is a former legislator in this building who I have incredible respect for, who, I've had a rough few days, so I'm sentimental, but essentially he makes this argument. So, and he makes it as eloquently as you just did. Yes, these are decisions, they're choices. So do we give ourselves each $20 less in dividend money? And you might say, oh, Andy's made up this 20. No, it's like we're talking 20, 50 bucks. Now, I know that's important to people, but so is a quick response when the gun went off next door. So is, your wife's life when she's collapsed on the floor. Those things are important to the people of Alaska also.
Follow up.
Sorry,
you brought up another great point that made me want to ask a question. What are the implications on all of us in terms of public safety when we have such high turnover and we have a younger and younger workforce? We're losing our most experienced. Can you speak to a little bit about how that impacts us from a public safety perspective?
Yes, through the chair. I'm really glad you asked that. There is an intangible element to this, aside from the $6 million and aside from the training costs, and that is people just get better at their jobs. They just get better. They know their communities better. They are integrated with their communities. This is a known fact. And so what we're doing, ladies and gentlemen, I call this the train and drain. We train these people. The chair knows all about this, much more than I could ever know. At the highest level in the country, and other states drain them away. In fact, there is poaching going on where there are lateral transfers, and people target Alaskans because they know the skill set they can deliver. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a loss.
Just wanted to say thank you, and thank you to all the firefighters who are in the room. Thank you for being here.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, I want to thank Representative Josephson for bringing the bill forward. And it's funny that part of your presentation was showing that there were a number of bills in the past. The defined benefits, it felt like through your presentation, the defined benefits plan was again on trial. And I want to commend you for presenting a great opening defense statement. Every year we learn more about the defined benefits plans. They seem to morph and change as we have conversations, and the end result is always that they end up being costly and unsustainable. I want to take exception to your attempt to kind of mischaracterize the Reason Foundation assessment. I think they're fully against this bill and any and all defined benefits plans. And I don't think that they meant to write anything in support of the defined benefits plan. So I want to make sure that gets on the record, that they're they're not in any way in supportive of this. And the question that I have, because this is so far just a statement, but the question I have concerns some of the analysis that I've seen recently, that we're looking at maybe approximately a $3 billion increase to our unfunded liabilities with this plan. And the question that I have is the actuarial analysis that we're using a recent actuarial analysis, or is it one that's been used in past presentations?
I really appreciate the question. So the first thing you mentioned is that the Reason Foundation truly does dislike the bill. But the point I'm trying to make through the chair, Representative Carpenter, is they have a strange way of saying it in those two paragraphs. I mean, I wish I had critics like that. I really do. Okay? Because you've read what I showed you. It's a September 2022 article they wrote that said, first responders in Alaska are not being treated right. That's effectively a paraphrasing of what they wrote. The critics. Okay. It's tremendous, right? The $3 billion unfunded liability, there is no way that this plan could impose anything near that. This plan, in a decade, the actuaries say will cost $60 million. And I want you to know that there have been people say, well, we need an actuarial analysis. We had one as recently as May. So the firefighters have hired their own actuary, William Flick Fornia. The state hires Buck. But this is why I am glad you brought this up. One thing that Ms. Leary noted that I was unfamiliar with was, as a reform measure, presumably in 2006, the state ain't playing this game anymore. And the game I'm talking about is letting someone like Mercer lead us around by a leash. So we have a system now where the state puts the unfunded liability under a microscope annually to see for itself. Now, it hires consultants in part, although we got a lot of smart people, as you know. What's the status of this thing? We're not relying on just anybody. And then every 4 years they do, there's a better term for it than this, but they do a sort of a double dive, if you will, where they do a secondary look. And so this thing has been vetted and vetted and vetted again and again and again. And the number, and by the way, people say, oh, Josephson, your bill will cost money. I want it to cost some money. I want to pay these retirees more. That's the problem. Okay. So I'm not afraid of the $6 million. I'm not.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I meant by asking the question of the actuarial analysis is because it doesn't surprise me that the administration, who may be in favor of this plan, or certain members within the administration, the supporters on the outside, would conduct an actuarial analysis that might turn out to be in favor of it. I would question that the legislature make a decision on this without having an independent analysis of our own that we can look at that isn't from somebody who's supporting or is pro-defined benefits. I agree with you that in my own analysis, and what I've seen is that our defined contributions plans are not competitive with other plans throughout the nation. And to that extent, we should be looking at a modification or sweeteners to our defined contributions plan, but that's not what this bill does. And the argument that the only thing that we can do to help state employees or first responders is a defined benefits plan is simply untrue. It's a false statement. We can do other things like sweeten a defined contributions plan that the rest of the private sector has to deal with. So it concerns me that we would put our state employees in a position where if the performance of the fund doesn't reach a target, their target 7% or somewhere around there is what you said earlier, then their individual contributions would have to come up. Meaning in effect, that's a reduction in their take home pay in order to meet this. Whereas you could do a different defined contributions plan that sweetens the deal with today's dollars for today's employees, and it wouldn't affect their take home pay because it's a policy call that we're making. So I don't know. I also take exception to the statement that we have vetted this and vetted this and vetted this, because the last committee that had this rushed it out of committee without asking many questions. So I'm a little concerned that we're going to rush that. It's a complex issue. It has major implications for future budgets and our long-term fiscal plan, Mr. Chair. If it was rushed through the last committee without much scrutiny, I think it's incumbent upon us to take some time with this. We've got a lot of other things to do in this committee, so that kind of presents a challenge to us. I don't know. I'd move that we send this committee to a subcommittee that can study some of these details and report back to this body so that we can make a good judgment call. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Josephson.
I know there's a motion on the table. I'm not in your committee, but Representative Carpenter made some good points, and I want to quickly just go through them, if I might, very quickly.
Okay.
You noted the state's actuary. I don't know. I have zero evidence that the Dunleavy administration wants this bill. In fact, I have some evidence of the opposite. That's number one. Number two, the state, if I were governor, I would want Buck Consulting to look after my pocketbook. And that's what Buck Consulting does. So the idea, believe me, Buck doesn't want to be Mercer. It wants to be Buck. And it's going to draw a hard line. If it sees a problem, it will report that hard line. That's the second thing. The other thing is, when I said the bill's been vetted, everything you said is correct. There are ways the previous committee could have vetted the bill further. I've spent countless scores of hours working on this bill, so I know that there's a tremendous amount to cover. 100% true. What I meant to say is that sort of what frustrates me, Representative Carpenter, is when people, in quotes, say, well, this bill just isn't ready for prime time, or it hasn't been vetted, or no, we don't know what it does. No one will tell us what it does. Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's unfair. This is a bill that almost got through Senate. And then the final thing is, the other options, there are other options. But again, note what the critic, Reason Foundation, says. They say one of them is to pay for the state to pay 4% more in its retirement. Okay. That's almost doubling what the state pays now. And we think that this plan is actually cheaper. In fact, what's amazing is...
Representative, you said you were going to make it short.
Okay.
I know how you are about your short answers.
We don't think we have to go far as the Reason Foundation. That's a remarkable statement I just said. We think this is cheaper than what the Reason Foundation has highlighted.
We're going to take a quick ease just to take a breather.
You bet.
Record. Representative Allard, did you have another comment?
Thank you.
We'll try to keep on track.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I do have a comment, but I also wanted to state through the Chair, Representative Josephson, as a few minutes ago, March the 7th, 2023, the senior policy analyst, Ryan Frost, from the Reason Foundation, basically contradicted everything you said. He also went on to say the $800 million would be the cost to the defined benefits, and it lacks sufficient controls to justify the proponent's assertion. I just wanted to put that on there. I have this on record here, and I could hand it out to every member of the House to include you or to the state affairs. But I also wanted to reiterate a little bit of what Representative Carpenter had said, Chair. I believe that we do need to move this into a subcommittee. We need to quit going with the notion that we take people's PFD that can go towards their retirement and give it to someone else for their retirement without a full audit. So I would support what Representative Carpenter has suggested.
Thank you, Representative Allard. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember the Mercer actuary. And so, fair or not, I kind of lump all of them together. They were paid to come up with an answer, and they did. And I think that maybe that's, I don't think it's standard practice, but I think there are auditors or actuaries out there that will come up with the answer you want. I want to make sure that we're not dealing with that kind of situation again. They made mistakes, and I think that Representative Carpenter is absolutely correct that we need to take our own look at it, not depend on the administration. We are a separate body, and that we need to take a closer look at it and take a deeper dive.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Any additional comments or questions? Seeing none. I definitely appreciate the interaction that we've had here between the sponsor and the committee, but the subject matter of this bill is, it's extremely important. The big part of the problem is extremely complex. We've been dealing with this over the years, and I'll note that while this bill is narrowly focused on public safety employees, it was highlighted earlier, companion legislation in the other body, Senate Bill 88, is significantly different and has a much broader scope, and we have to take that into consideration. We are reliably informed by the leader of the minority caucus that this bill, among others, requires a higher level of attention. I fully agree with the minority leader on this, on House Bill 22. That having been said, the House State Affairs Committee has quite a large roster of bill referrals. I think I'm up to about 25. While this bill and the matter of recruitment and retention in general require a higher level of attention, the work of this committee must nonetheless continue apace. In that spirit, and pursuant to Uniform Rule 20B, I'm establishing a subcommittee which shall be called the House State Affairs Subcommittee on House Bill 22 and Senate Bill 88. This shall be a three-member subcommittee, shall be chaired by Representative Craig Johnson. The other two members shall consist of Representative Ben Carpenter and Representative Andy Story. It's my intent that Senate Bill 88, when it comes over from the other body, will also be referred to the subcommittee. At that point, the subcommittee on House Bill 22 and Senate Bill 88 will evaluate the relative advantages and disadvantages of the two proposals. We'll report back to the House State Affairs Committee and their findings with recommendations for a unified proposal. To that end, and pursuant to Mason's Manual Section 651, the Subcommittee on House Bill 22 and Senate Bill 88 is authorized to make whatever efforts and undertakings as needed to carry out this task. I thank the new chair of the Subcommittee on House Bill 22, Representative Johnson, and then Senate Bill 88 for his willingness to take on this responsibility, and I trust that the two offices will work closely together on this matter. Thus, the Subcommittee on House Bill 22 and Senate Bill 88 is established. And at this time, I'm referring House Bill 22 to the House State Affairs Committee, Subcommittee, and the House Bill 22, along with Senate Bill 88. And with that, we adjourn.